Coming up on this morning's programme, we're going to be discussing the vices and virtues of the virtual world, because this Tuesday marks Safer Internet Day. So to discuss how children and adults can best protect themselves online, what obligations social media providers have to their users, and whether or not they should actually be doing more, I'm joined by an expert panel to discuss all of the issues. Today we have Harry McCann, founder of KidTech and the Digital Youth Council. Also Dr. Claire Hayes, consultant, clinical psychologist, lecturer and author of Finding Hope in the Age of Anxiety, News Talk's tech correspondent and presenter of Tech Talk, Jess Kelly, and also Owen O'Dell, associate professor at Trinity College Dublin's Law School and also a member of the Government Data Forum. You're all very welcome into studio this morning, folks.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Okay, look, first of all, we've had plenty of discussion about online safety in recent days, and that's going to continue, obviously, this week with Safer Internet Day on Tuesday. But just first off, to try and maybe give us a flavour of the extent of the problem, Harry McCann, founder of KidTech and also with the Digital Youth Council. Just how bad is the problem?
Yeah, it's huge. I think the safety of young people online at the moment is probably the biggest discussion. I think to say, we made a statement during the week and we said that we feel personally, the Digital Youth Council, that we've let down a generation and we failed to prepare them for the biggest threat they face growing up in 21st century Ireland. There's so many risks online and we're providing little to no education at all and we haven't prepared them. I think the biggest thing I heard this week was that, you know, at night we lock our doors to keep our family safe, but there's a new kind of person coming into our house who's endangering our young people. And, you know, they're coming in on the online world where there's very little to no rules, it seems, at the moment.
Jess Kelly, you are a great advocate of tech and all things technology related. One of the things we've noticed, and for good and bad reasons, but there is just more and more people, and even in particular children, that are online at the moment.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, I think there's absolutely a serious conversation that needs to be had in terms of keeping safe online, whether you are a 9-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 28-year-old like I am, or a 50-year-old, you have to exercise cop on, no matter what you're doing on the online space. What I want to talk about and look at and, you know, hear the views of everybody is, I feel this is a conversation we should have been having 5 years ago.
Okay, you know, so we're just behind the curve.
We're so far behind it. What we've done is we've let a problem transpire and then going, oh, sugar, let's do something about this now. You know, Harry says there, you know, we're letting somebody else into our homes in terms of the people that we're talking to in the online space. I have felt this in my adult life. Thankfully, the biggest thing that I had to worry about when I was in school was who was in my top 16 in Bebo. Right. That was as stressful as things got for me. Now it's so much more beyond that, because there's more sites, there's more apps, there's more, you know, there's camera phones, there's cameras everywhere. There's the pressure to upload your images into different forums. And I just think that it has just gone so far beyond, isn't it awful? We need to now just have solution-based conversations. Even if you suggest something and it's not the ideal solution, make an effort, have a conversation, and you can't think, oh, well, that doesn't apply to my child, because it may not apply to them today, but it'll apply to them some stage. And again, even if you don't have kids, it's all of our problem to address and to try and fix, because it can be fixed. Saying it can't be fixed, you know, the talk about the smartphone ban, that's trying to put the genie back in the bottle. We have these smartphones. The internet is here. It's not a fad. It's here to stay. So we need to address the problems and work towards solutions.
Okay. Can I just ask yourself, Dr. Claire Hayes, as a consultant clinical psychologist, the problems that both Harry and Jess have talked about, and I suppose very specifically even relate to children, and Jess touched on the fact that it relates to adults as well. But that's kind of one of the key things here. This isn't just a children, teenager problem. This is very much affecting adults as well.
Absolutely. I mean, adults are very, very concerned about their children and they're very anxious, but also it affects us as adults as well. And in thinking about the topic, Andrea, it's absolutely safety is key, but I think we need to broaden the conversation out as well. And I completely agree with Jess that we're possibly slow in doing it, but now is as good a time as any. And when we're talking about the advantages or the disadvantages of the internet and the pros and the cons, I met with a 14-year-old girl very recently and I did my research and I asked her, what did she think about the use of technology? And she said, just please say that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages if technology is used properly.
But that's the problem, isn't it?
And that's the problem. But I think for us as adults as well, and I think, yes, there's a thing about safety and there's a thing about, you know, who's there and how vulnerable we are. But there's also the sense of how manipulated, is that the right word? How much we can be controlled by advertisers. And right across the board, I bought a skirt a few months ago and it's a particularly nice skirt and I couldn't find a top to go with it. And I just Googled. And ever since, practically every single day, I'm being bombarded by sites telling me about this particular jacket that I looked at a few months ago. And I'm just being stubborn. I'm just saying, no, I am actually not going to buy that. And I've just been struck by, if that's happening to me, and I do very little internet shopping, and I didn't buy the thing in the first place, but they recognise somehow that I'm a person who is interested in that particular jacket. What must it be like for people that really do spend a lot of time on shopping channels or whatever it is on the internet? So there's also the addictive piece, and there's a piece about we do what makes us feel good. So checking our emails, feel good. If we don't check the news feed, we might be missing out. So there's so many different areas where I think we really need to look at how we can act responsibly, and that we are in control of how we use the internet rather than advertisers or predators or whatever else.
Because that's the thing. There's two very different kind of conversations, and you've mentioned both of them. There's obviously from a, you know, from the angle of where you have predators from a very negative perspective, but also even just that level of even anxiety that you can get from the likes of those various different, you know, ads and targeted advertising, you know, even at you as an individual.
Yes. But it all comes back though to the point that, as you mentioned there, technology is addictive. You know, there's Shane O'Mara, who's a neuroscientist in TCD, and he's a brilliant communicator about this very topic. He says that when you get a like on a photo, it's the same as winning $2 in a casino in Las Vegas. You get a little high. Mm. And so we crave it. And so it's not very difficult to see how we as adults get roped in into whether it's the online shopping or sharing stuff on Instagram or Facebook, but also the kids, because kids can go online because they get attention. There's always someone online. If it's not one of their friends, it's a stranger. If it's not a stranger, it's a chatbot. There's always someone there for attention. And that's what they crave. Mm. And why do they crave it? Because they see us getting attention from our phones. Yeah. You know, if you sit around a dinner table very often and, you know, we all like to think, oh, no, it's not me, but I do it. You'd have your phone, like, as I'm talking to you now, I'm keeping an eye on my phone the entire time. It's a habit that we all have.
I'm very insulted by that, by the way.
Just be more interesting, lads. No, but seriously, it is. It's something that it's become second nature. So then when I see my niece picking up my phone and, you know, swiping to get Peppa Pig, I'm not dumbfounded like, oh my God, she's a child genius. No, she watches us. Yeah. She sees our behaviour. And so I think it makes perfect sense that we are all becoming addictive and chasing those likes and those clicks.
It's just when you look at it, on from a young person's perspective, when I'm looking at it and going, especially I have a young sister at home, and I work a lot with young people through the work with the Digital Youth Council, and we see even the smallest thing is putting a picture up online. The amount of thought that goes into putting a single picture up is huge, and you'll see it. So somebody will put up a picture and they'll spend a huge amount of time thinking about the picture, what filter they're going to put onto it, what they're going to say underneath it.
The hashtags,
everything. But then it's the scariest part about that is they'll wait and they'll watch and they'll wait for every single like to come in. But they all have their own expectations of what's doing well and what is good for me in regards to likes. And I suppose there's a lot of analysing goes into this. But the saddest thing I always think is that the people who don't get enough, they take it down. And they're not confident enough to keep it up there no matter how many people like it. And there's a good quote online. It's about how, you know, a million likes will never make you happy if you're not happy with yourself. And that's it, you know, a million likes will never be enough. And I think it's sad because it is addictive and it's very addictive.
Can I just bring you in, Owen O'Dell, from Associate Professor in Trinity College Dublin's Law School. Is it a case that people are just completely ignorant to and unaware of the level of kind of data and information that they're giving the internet and everybody on the internet world about themselves?
Yes, I think the short answer there is yes, that the example of the advertising that is coming on the basis of a single search is just a microcosm of what's going on. Want to make 2 points. The first point is that I think there are four levels of responses. Once we identify the problem, there are four levels of responses. One is the legal response. The second is what's going on at home. The third is a sort of a social conversation. And then when we include kids, all of those three, plus also what's going on at school. And I don't think any one of those responses is sufficient. I think it has to be all four. But I think all four have to be appropriate or proportionate. You can't overreact. You can't ban the internet, or you can't ban phones, or you can't ban kids having some kind of engagement.
Okay.
What you need to do instead is to have the kinds of conversations that Jess is talking about in all of those four. What's the appropriate legal response and why? What's the appropriate response at home? What's the appropriate response in school? What's the appropriate social conversation?
Okay, because one of the points that Jess mentioned even a little bit earlier on at the outset is the fact that we're, you know, we're behind the curve. We're 5 years too late having all of these different conversations. Mm-hmm. In your experience in the legal world, is that something that you agree with?
Well, better late than never.
Okay.
Secondly, the law always limps behind technology. The technology races ahead. We see the benefits. We also see the disadvantages. We try to encourage the benefits and to regulate the disadvantages. Whether the technology is the motor car, back when the internal combustion engine was originally developed, people had to walk in front of the car with a red flag because this horrible machine was coming along down the road afterwards and it was limited to 3 miles an hour. Now we see the benefits and the disadvantages of the motor car. So whatever technology we have, we have to become aware of not just the benefits, but the disadvantages. And then we need to engage with the disadvantages on all four of the areas that I've just described.
Okay.
And when it comes to technology, there are two big disadvantages. One is the question of predators with which you mm-hmm. began. And the other is this idea of the ubiquity of data and what's happening to our data. There are different disadvantages. But they are both disadvantages, and they need to be regulated in their own terms.
Can I just bring you in on that point as well, Jess? Just mm-hmm. that Owen was talking about there.
Well, just the thing that intrigues me, you're talking about the different types of technology and how technology is always ahead of the law in that regard. I was having a conversation with my dad over Christmas, and he made the point that, because again, we talk obviously a lot about technology, but he was saying that when TVs first entered the home, that was the first time people could look at the world outside, that they got to see what was going on outside their realm and outside their bubble. And parents weren't happy because kids were sitting down too long in front of the TV, and they were saying, oh, well, look, the family on the TV has that. Why don't we have that? The internet and the smartphone is just another kick on from that. The issue is, and the issue that I see with it, is that we can now talk back. So it's like us talking back to the telly saying, well, why don't we have that? And if I don't have it, I'm going to pretend that I have it and create a persona for myself so that other people want what I have. And I think it's a very slippery slope. And, you know, absolutely the law is catching up. And in terms of the data, you know, GDPR, the General Data mm-hmm. Protection Regulation, is coming into effect in May of this year. That's going to put data at the core of the company's minds, but also our minds. You know, I think I was telling you before, Andrea, that like I data mined myself a few years ago for an experiment, and I figured out that, you know, I do my food shop on most likely on a Wednesday because I tend to bitch and moan about it on Twitter on a Wednesday. Those small little pieces of information, they may seem insignificant to me, but a company can use that, and they can push me, whether it's advertising or vouchers or whatever it may be, to get me to spend my money in their store.
That's a point as well, Owen O'Dell, that actually Dr. Claire Hayes had mentioned a little bit earlier, that idea of kind of the targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. And just, can you just tell us a little bit about that? Where the legislation currently is in terms of the use of kind of your own personal data and how that's stored in companies?
Well, this is a very good week to have that discussion, because on Thursday the government published the Data Protection Bill to implement forthcoming European law on data protection. And basically, when it comes to your data, people who are processing that data have to have a legitimate ground to process it, whether it's your consent or whether it's a statutory basis. And when it comes to kids, the government decided in that bill that for kids 13 and over, they can consent to the processing of their data. And for kids under 13, the parents must consent or else the data can't be processed. So the first thing is data protection gives a significant degree of control to the individual over the data that he or she generates.
But it's only to the age of 13?
From 13 up.
13 up, okay.
Under 13, the parents must consent, which effectively means that kids don't have access to, on their own terms, to internet sites and to apps and so on. But from 13 up, assuming this bill becomes law in the terms in which it was published on Thursday, then from the age of 13 on, kids will be able to consent to the processing of their data and therefore will be able to access the various apps and things online. Mm-hmm.
Can I just ask you, Harry McCann, founder of Kid Tech, just what's your reaction to that? Is that enough? Is 13 as an age, is that high enough? Well, or low enough even, as it would be?
Yeah, in October of 2016, we had the opportunity, I'm a member of the Data Protection Forum for the government, and the DigiU Council had an opportunity to submit a recommendation on the age of consent. And our recommendation, after speaking to every member, there was a huge interest in kind of submitting interest in this. And the age of consent, we felt, should be 13. We felt that it was sufficient. We felt that the opportunities online and the positives far outweighed the negatives. But at the moment, I'm personally worried, and a lot of the members during the week after the case of Matthew Horne and other various situations are very concerned about the action being taken by the government. The biggest thing in our recommendation was that we believe the age of consent should be 13, but digital education should be at the core. And we should be teaching young people how to behave responsibly and safely online. I spoke with the Department for Data Protection at the Taoiseach, and we said that, unfortunately, that if there isn't education going to be provided, that we can no longer support the age of consent being 13. It would be irresponsible of us to do so, because at the moment, I feel like we're throwing kids outside the door and saying, go do whatever you want, speak to strangers, give them all your personal information, go in cars with strangers. I feel like that's what we're saying.
Okay.
And we're not actually providing them with any education at all. So,
can I just bring you, Dr. Claire Hayes, in on that point as well, the age of consent. What's your reaction to that? And how do you think parents will respond to that?
I think parents are I know parents are very, very concerned about it. And the young people at whatever age are saying, yes, I know. Yes, I'm able. And I think the difficulty is that they're not seeing the dangers that Jess has described and that Harry's described really, really clearly. I'm struck by what you were saying, Owen, in terms of the car. We don't put young children driving a car. And we have a very clear structures now where we and they've got tighter, so that young people, they have to do their driving test first, the literacy one, before they're even allowed to get their driving lessons. And then once they pass the driving test, they still have to have a letter on their car for another year that they're probational. So we've got stricter and stricter about how we let children and young people, not children obviously, but young people drive. So I think the conversation around consent, I think we've come back to the adults to be responsible here. And a lot of adults are giving children phones at a young age because the children want them and the parents feel good about the children feeling good. And it can be very difficult for parents to actually say no to their children, because then the children cry or they get upset or the other children have it. And then parents are feeling bad and they want to make the child happy. And so it goes. And the dangers are so phenomenal. We talk about mental health, one in four children, young people experiencing anxiety or depression. Like, the stats are frightening.
And that's adults as well, even. It's not just children.
Absolutely. There was research done that I was looking at in the States in 2016 about how much time do people actually spend on technology. And I was shocked that from 12 to 18, young people spend 9 hours, and from 8 to 12, 6 hours. And that's not including time to do homework. So,
incredible figure.
So it's incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
And one of the things as well you often hear about is the effect that can have on, particularly in children, on their kind of cognitive development and physical development as kids as well. Yeah. Because, like, I remember as a child, you know, growing up in Donegal, that, like, you spent your kind of playtime in the evenings. You were out, you know, with your kind of neighbours and building huts and all of this kind of stuff. But you were outside. Like, there was you weren't sitting inside on the phone. And, like, that has to have an effect, whether it be good or bad, on kids' mental health.
It does. And following on from what Harry was saying about the people, not just children, again, putting something up and taking it down, what's the underlying message there? We're not good enough. And all of us compare ourselves to everybody else. I think we always have done. But now we have the whole world to compare ourselves. And we know with technology that we're not looking at actually what's true. So our people are, I can't even think of the terms, but they're changed, the pictures are altered.
Yeah.
But the children,
you can create
a
sort of what you view as being a sort of kind of a better version, effectively, of yourself.
Absolutely.
Or a version that you're happier with.
Absolutely. Because you're not happy with the real version.
Owen O'Dell, can I just take you in on that point as well?
Sure. 2 points. First, I think we all wear masks anyway. We present a persona, whether it's an online persona or in the real world. We might feel grotty, but we go to our meetings, we go to our work, we go to our class, we go to our school. So that's something that we all do. We shouldn't look back at our childhoods with rose-tinted glasses or see evil around the corner in the present day. We need to be more realistic about our perspective. And it's only when we exaggerate too much or when we become addicted that there are problems. I think it's very easy to say that there are problems and then say something must be done. But I think we have to be very careful that the things that we do aren't overreactions.
But that's where we are now, though, because we're at the stage that what happened last week was that the spotlight was thrown on to parenting online. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of was saying, God, isn't it awful? And we heard the worst case scenarios, and what was reported was just horrific and stomach churning. But we know that it's bad. So now I think what we need to do is not let it die down with the news cycle. We need to address the problems and we need to have solution-based conversations.
And how do we do that, Jess Kelly?
I think it starts with education. And I'm blue in the face saying this, right? But if you give a child a smartphone, if you as a parent give a child a smartphone, you have the responsibility to educate them how to behave online. If you have a child, you teach them to say please, you teach them to say thank you, and you teach them how to tie their shoelaces. You can't just give them a phone and say good luck. So what I would recommend parents do is set up a smartphone for a child and tie it to an account, an email account that you are the you authorize, and you can then see what apps are on the phone. If there's an app that you don't recognize or you're not sure of, have a conversation with them. Don't just give them free rein. That small step gives you a bit of control, and that's what this all is about. It's you as a parent remaining in control.
Okay, and I just want to bring you Harry McCann in on talking about the idea of if a parent has a smartphone or a laptop and they give it to their kid, that they need to educate them how to use it. You can't just let them off into the virtual world. What do you say to that?
No, I completely agree. I think it's 100% right. I wouldn't disagree with anything Jess has said. And I think the biggest thing for me was on Friday night, the Late Late Show, I think, addressed the issue really poorly. I think by trying to show the very worst case scenario, it scared a lot of people and it's not going to get any good reaction from that. The first thing to say is that I'm a strong believer in that there's more positives online and there's more benefits to having technology than there is negatives. It's a huge thing. Digital Youth Council works with hundreds of people all across the country, and we see young people who are making friends, connecting, even building businesses. So there's huge positives. I think the biggest thing here is we have to take responsibility when we hand over the smartphone that we know exactly what's happening.
So what do you say to any parent maybe that's listening this morning who's just thinking, you know, I just got my kid a phone for Christmas or for their birthday, I gave them an iPad or whatever I did. How do they actually say, well, I'm after giving them this, you know, this gift now. How am I going to police how they use it?
A lot of parents were asking this, and this was a big conversation on Twitter during the week, and people were asking, what apps would you recommend? What software? What tools with this and that? And, you know, you can recommend 1,000 different apps, but I think the biggest thing is that you're open and honest and that there's a relationship there where that if anything was to go wrong, firstly, that the child feels comfortable and safe going to their parent and saying, something's gone wrong, I've done something, something's not right, and that there's an open, honest relationship. It shouldn't be something that they're afraid to tell, that they're going to get in trouble, that there's going to be some trouble. Of course, there might be a possibility if there's going to be trouble, but the main thing is there's an open, honest relationship.
Okay. So you mean even in the case maybe where if a child or, you know, has sent a message or a picture or whatever it is, and you know, neither if they're in any way, you know, regretting it, they shouldn't have done it, they're coming under pressure from a third party or whatever, that their parents are in a position to sit down with them and say, okay, look, we need to look at how to address this, but that conversation is able to be had.
It's an open and honest relationship. And I think the biggest thing as well is that, you know, I know when I was growing up and I got my first phone, my phone was my parents' phone as well. You know, if they wanted to look at my phone at any stage at all, they were more than welcome to do so. It was the case that if I had a smartphone, that they were able to look at it. And if they weren't able to look at it, I wasn't going to have a phone.
Okay.
That was simple. And I think it has to be that way, you know. You have to take a chance to go, look, you're a child, you're a young person, we need to be able to look at what you're doing. And, you know, we don't go out of the house without telling our parents where we're going. Shouldn't be using a phone without telling them what we're doing.
Dr. Clara Hayes, how best can parents navigate the online virtual world for their kids?
I think, first of all, by looking at their own use of the internet, and really reflecting on that and whether they're using it responsibly themselves. And not, as Jess said, do as I do, but and not as I say, or the other way around. But also, I think it's really important that they help their children develop responsibility for it, so that the children themselves are feeling good about saying, you know, I'm turning off my phone now because I'm going up to bed. I'm leaving my phone downstairs. I don't need it in my bedroom. Rather than a row between, you know, give me your phone, no, give me your phone, no. And I think the more the parents work in helping their children become responsible and be in control. And something that struck me the other day was, I'm in control of my phone. It's not my phone's in control of me. And I think if we could get that message out for young children, adults, all of us, that we actually can choose how much time we want to spend on the phone. We can choose the sites we want to go on. If something wrong comes in, as Harry said, absolutely, it's really important that the young people speak to their parents. And then as parents, that they really are willing and able to be the parents, that they don't have to be their children's friends. And tough if the young people don't like them checking their phone, it's their responsibility as adults to do that.
Okay. Jess Kelly, I know you're very very passionate about this, but just if there's parents listening this morning, and I'm conscious that they're probably thinking, you know, like, for God's sakes, we were under pressure, all of the friends had a phone, we had to get the iPad, you know, we got them what they wanted, neither saying that we're invading their privacy because we want to know the password or check the account, and that's not feasible now. My child is a teenager. Like, it can be, it can be difficult. I don't want to say the parents are totally, like, they're not totally to blame, but
it's such a hard thing. I don't envy parents in any way, shape, or form. I just think it's an absolute minefield. And obviously, we're talking, like, I'm talking as someone who doesn't have a child. Obviously, you've got a 15-year-old. There's hormones flying everywhere. There's emotions. There's probably a whole backstory that none of us know anything about. But it's about trying to address the issue. What I found, because I go around to different schools and I talk to the parents of first year students about, you know, how they can look for signs and change in behaviour and what to do if your child comes to you with a problem in the online space. But what I found to a certain extent is that the parents think the teachers are educating the kids about this, and the teachers think the parents are educating them about this, and it's kind of fallen between two stools a little bit. So I would encourage any parent, it doesn't matter if you have an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old living at home, you still need to have these conversations. As Harry said, open communication is going to solve a hell of a lot more than me listing off 10 top tips for you. It's all about your situation, your household, and what works best for you. I think that, you know, a lot of the, one word that I've heard a lot over the last 2 weeks is powerless. Parents have been saying they feel powerless. And I think that's a terrifying thing for any parent to have to say and to acknowledge.
They shouldn't,
But I don't actually think that is the case. There's a great, webwise.ie is a website, right? And this is a free resource, and they have a section for parents and they have a section for teachers. And on that is a guidebook that teaches parents the language, so the terminology. So what is sexting? What are the apps that we need to watch out for? What do I do? How do I take a screenshot? Basic practical things that give you some of that power back. And I think you'll feel much more confident if you know the terminology, or if a child comes to you saying, you know, so I've seen something, I don't like it. If you can say to your child, block, report, screenshot, like those little small things, and just knowing the terminology and not suddenly think that they're speaking double Dutch, I think it can go a long way.
Okay, I want to bring you in, Owen O'Dell, on this, just from a very kind of a practical legal perspective, because I'm conscious there's a lot of kind of legal jargon for parents as well. Can you just explain in simple terms, what are the social media sites, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, all of the different accounts, what are their current responsibilities to any account holder, whether they be a child or an adult, in terms of, you know, if something goes wrong, somebody has a photograph of you, if they've put up something about you, what can a parent do right now? And we'll talk about how that might change in the future, but what's the current situation?
There's not a great deal of regulation of the social media sites in those kinds of circumstances. I'll go back first to the questions of the predator online and the case the week before last, and just point out that the problem there wasn't necessarily the social media sites, it was the predatory nature of the accused, the guy who was convicted. And that kind of shows that the criminal law isn't so far behind. He would have been a predator in all sorts of different circumstances. If it wasn't the technology, it would have been in the real world. He was caught and he was convicted. So that's the first thing, that there are, if you commit a criminal offence online, it's still a criminal offence and you will still be caught and convicted. When it comes to the responsibilities of the social media sites, at the moment, they don't have a great deal of responsibility. And there are arguments that there ought to be more regulation of the social media sites to impose responsibilities here.
So just, can I just be clear on that, just by way of an example? So if I go on to one of my social media sites now this morning and I put up, you know, a picture of Jess Kelly and say something about Jess Kelly, you know, she is A, B and C. Where do we stand? Jess Kelly doesn't like what I've said about her in the picture I've posted. Yeah. So what can her parents now do if she's a child?
They sue you.
Okay, so it just comes down to it's the criminal.
It's the person who has made the comment, posted the picture or whatever. That person is primarily liable. And the question then is the extent to which the site that is hosting that message can also be liable. And the answer at the moment is that they're not liable simply for your actions. If Jess's parents bring it to their attention, and if it is criminal or defamatory or an invasion of privacy or a breach of copyright or something, then they can take it down.
So they're the facilitator, effectively. They haven't made the defamatory comment but they've facilitated me in doing so.
Yeah, they're the intermediary. They're the middle person.
Okay, so the parents should bring it to their attention.
Yeah, you bring it to their attention, you give them notice, and then they have to take it down if they consider that it's defamatory or whatever. And in general, they do. Once they get notice of some sort of criminal or civilly liable act, they will usually take it down. And if they don't take it down, then thereafter they are are liable as well. So the incentive to take it down is the possible liability thereafter.
And presumably at the moment, the social media sites, because like, there's a whole range of them without mm-hmm. going into naming yep. every one of them, but presumably they are, I suppose, they act quick once something is reported to them, that it's in their interest to make
broadly
sure it's taken
speaking
down.
Yes, I mean in some cases this is automated. YouTube has an automated system in respect of copyright infringements, for example, but most of the others have a sort of a person, a moderator, who is responding to individual complaints, and that can take a little bit of time, and the legislation just requires them to ask reasonably, not to act immediately. So sometimes things can stay up for longer than you would be comfortable with simply because they haven't got to it.
Okay.
And there are then questions as to whether that response is an appropriate one.
Okay, that's the current position.
Yeah.
How do you, as somebody that works within the legal world, how do you think we can better improve the current legislation to allow for greater protection? Or do the social media sites, should they even be responsible at all for this?
Well, one of the proposals is that the social media sites should be able to use their algorithms, their analyses, and be proactive in identifying things that ought to be taken down. But on the other hand, there is the argument that the sorts of things that they are going to identify to take down might not necessarily be illegal or creating a civil liability, and that therefore the algorithms are going to give too many false positives and overreact. But there have been some proposals in the US and in the European Union to remove the immunity that they currently have. And instead of saying you only have to take something down if there is notice, that you are responsible for things you leave through. But if you do that, if you make them responsible for everything, that changes the very nature of what they're doing.
Okay, Jess Kelly, should the social media sites take a greater responsibility in terms of what's, I suppose, being said and posted on their sites?
It's such a heated debate, and you can go around, you can dance around this one a million different times. What I think needs to happen is, and Facebook have done this, Facebook announced last year that they're hiring 3,000 more human being moderators. So these aren't bots, these are human beings who will click approve or disapprove on something and take it down if it's inappropriate. But I also just think that we need to take some form of personal responsibility. I think it does come back to the point that I made at the very beginning of this hour, personal cop on. Like, and I know that there are, you know,
there's a lot to be said for it in general.
There is, and whether it's in real life or online, and I know that there is, you know, there's bots out there and there are fake news sites and there's a whole other agenda. But let the corporate lads look after that. If we all just take a bit more cop on, a bit more pride and a bit more awareness of other people, then there will be less for the social networks to do. I think there's a lot to be said for it because, you know, if you look up on social media on any given day, if you click on a hashtag on any of the sites, you'll find a nasty comment about pretty much everything. Like, there's a lot of rage there. There's a lot of anger and people go online to do it because it's anonymous and they can get away with it. But I just think that if we interact with people in a correct way, and I know it sounds very Oprah Winfrey, but stick with me here. If we all act in an appropriate way, then there'll be less for the moderators to do. I also think that we're going to see a U-turn this year. I think people are rowing back from the social media networks to a certain extent. You know, Facebook has changed its algorithm in a wee way to try and get more of your friends and your family interaction back and less of the news and less of the ads, that sort of stuff. And they're doing that because they realise people are ticked off being pushed this stuff the entire time. It goes back to the anxiety point, it goes back to the bullying, it goes back to everything. We just need a bit of headspace in the online space, and that doesn't exist at the moment.
Okay, just before we take this break, just Tara McCann, just briefly on that point, should the social media sites should they have a greater responsibility in all of this?
I don't think so. I think I'd agree with Jess. I think cop on has to be a big thing. I think we just have to take responsibility for ourselves. You know, we can't rely on them to do everything. There's billions of people online, everybody's using it, there's so many users, we can't expect them to monitor everything.
I want to touch on another point today because we've been talking about responsibility and the various different problems with the online world. But Dr. Claire Hayes, the idea of education, how can we better educate children and ourselves as adults as well to use the online world?
First of all, individual responsibility. We really need to be informed about this. We need to look at what the pros are, what the cons are, where we stand in it and take responsibility. And I know schools absolutely have a role, but having been a teacher myself years ago, having worked training teachers, there is a resistance in the education world to more and more and more being dumped on them. And they are not responsible for looking after society. So I think in terms of education, I think it's not fair to landed on the schools, I think every single one of us as adults has a role in teaching children how to use phones responsibly.
Just on that idea of teaching children, there was a lot of talk in recent times from teachers who have been highlighting the, you know, greater levels, they said, of anxiety amongst their students at primary and secondary school level. Yeah. How much of that do you put down to technology? Is that something you've experienced or noticed from kids?
Yes, I have. And in terms of the anxiety is definitely increasing and it's out there. So how much of it is to do with anxiety, with the technology or their parents' anxiety about technology or us talking about it? So now children have become really aware that there's something scary about phones. So they're becoming anxious about it and they're picking that up separate from whatever actually might be on the phone. So I think with anxiety, it's really important to acknowledge it and to take our power back. So to really, as adults, take our power back from the technology and say, OK, yes, it is scary. But if we were to think about any day in our lives, it could be scary. Anything could happen. But we each have an individual responsibility to keep ourselves as safe as we can, knowing that if the worst happens, if we're knocked down by a car, if someone we love dies, that somehow as individuals, as people, we have an ability to cope with that and to get support from other people.
OK. Jess Kelly, can I just bring you in on that point? Not just children, but for adults as well. How can we take greater responsibility in terms of what we're posting and using the online world?
You know what? I think it does come back to exactly what was said there. It comes down to, you know, do I need to share this? Do I need to be always on? The point about anxiety is something that intrigues me because, you know, as I said at the beginning, I'm 28 and last Monday I went home from work, I turned my phone off and I had to walk away from it because it was stressing me out. The amount of notifications, the amount of emails, the amount of people that needed me to reply yesterday, it's just horrific. And the thing is, you know, we are slaves to it. And this always on culture, and it's there with the 24-hour news sites. You know, you can see the doom and gloom. You can see what's going on. You can get push notifications on your phone. You can see people calling you every name under the sun on Twitter. You can share Instagrams of your perfect life. There's no stop to it. So I think we very much all do need, not necessarily digital detox where we walk away from technology entirely, but we need at least 1 hour a day where we put the phones down. We create good habits for ourselves. And then, you know, try and identify what parts of the conversation or what conversations do we want to be involved in. There's an awful habit online where people think they have to have something to say on everything. And that does my head in.
We can all identify them as well.
You know them a million miles away. And it's just that thing of always having an opinion on something that nobody cares what you think. And I just think we all need to acknowledge that sometimes we can be that person as well. Okay. So you're not going to find me talking about, you know, the Kardashians or something I know nothing about. I literally stick to what I know and I'm walking away from those rows online because it's just, I think it's so unhealthy for us as adults, never mind the kids.
Harry McCann, in terms of the next 12 months and the next year, the next 5 years, in terms of a 5 year kind of a plan, what would your advice as somebody who's representing young people be to the government in terms of trying to make the online world a safer place for kids?
Yeah, as Jess said at the start, we're already 5 years behind. Yeah, we're behind on this. This should have been done a long time ago. So we do need to make it a key priority. And that's something I'm big on, is that the government does need to take action and needs to take action now. It needs to be education introduced at both primary and secondary school level. And we need to make sure that young people know and understand how to be safe and responsible online.
Do you mean like as a class subject? Because I remember even in my time at school, which isn't terribly long ago, that like you had the likes of your kind of CSPE and those kind of education models were introduced. Do you mean at that kind of a level?
Yeah, like SBHE does cover it a bit, but you know, they're always the big keyword. It's thrown out, sexting, don't do it, nudes, don't send them. You know, the big things, like just keywords that teachers like to throw out, and then that's it, it's covered, it's okay. But you know, we teach sex education because it's a part of life. It's a part of life, and that's what we need to do with digital technology. We need to make sure that we're teaching digital education because it is a part of life now.
And not just the bad stuff though as well. We need to, like, you know, we had the Young Scientist in January and you saw kids there showcasing amazing projects. What I've noticed over the last 5 years covering that event is that kids see a problem now and they don't just go, oh, I need to get my mommy or my daddy to fix that. They're like, oh, hang on a second, now I build a solution, whether it's an app or whether it's a physical product. So I don't want technology, the conversation about technology, just to be about the bad stuff. Because you're only going to ever hear about the bad stuff. We need to step back as well and acknowledge that there's so much good stuff.
Absolutely.
It's giving me my voice, giving you your voice, and that's an important thing.
It's so big. And I think even, as you said, the Beats Young Scientist is a key example of that. There's so many positives. And we, as I said, see that every day with young people. There's so many positives there. I don't think things like smartphone bans are worthwhile. They're not something we should be encouraging. It's just sweeping that responsibility under the carpet. Allow them to use them and use it positively and safely.
Just on, if I can give the very final point to you this morning, Owen O'Dell, just from the legal perspective, mm-hmm. how can things change legally for both children and adults online to improve the online world in the next couple of years?
Well, I'm heartened that this conversation has not become something must be done, let's regulate, let's make lots of things illegal, let's use the legal responses. This conversation has ranged over all of the social responses as well. But there are some things that the law can do. The Law Reform Commission made various recommendations about regulating harmful communications, and the Labour Party has brought forward a bill to give effect to the Law Reform Commission recommendations, and the government on Wednesday night accepted that bill. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a reasonably well-balanced bill. It's not an overreaction, which a lot of the previous proposals had been. Part of the Law Reform Commission recommendations, not just some legal responses, but also some governmental technical and social responses, a government office with responsibility for advising schools, parents and social as well. And that is just as important.
So nearly like a junior ministry?
No, a commission.
A commission, okay.
Sort of an equivalent of the Data Protection Commissioner, okay. but for...
Because we're going to have a Digital Safety Commission.
That's
though.
It, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's what you mean. Okay, yes. So that would be a welcome step.
Well, it hasn't been officially announced yet. This was one of the recommendations in the Law Reform Commission report, that not only do you have your legal responses, you have your social responses, mm-hmm. or you have your general responses. Some regulation around harmful communications is one thing, but some additional governmental and public supports for schools, for parents, for society as well. So you need both.
The education point that that Harry McCann brought up, is that something you think, even just from a legal perspective, in schools, colleges, primary schools, secondary schools, will that work if we have better education?
Provided it's part of a more wide-ranging response. Right at the start I said there are four levels of response here. The legal response, response in the home, response in society generally, and then in particular in the schools. So as Jess says, if we are looking to the positives and being aware of the negatives, and we do this in our own lives, if we do this socially and if we do it in the schools, but it has to be across the board.
I just want to bring just Harry McCann in that point. Would you think will that work?
Yeah, I think it will. I think obviously we can't fix it and we can't solve everything, and you know, nobody will ever be 100% safe online, but at least we'll be doing something, because at the moment I feel like we're doing nothing. So anything is a positive, and I think by doing, as Owen said, all those different things, we can do so much and we can help make people more safe online generally, and I think that's a positive.
Okay, look, we leave it there for today. My thanks to our panel this morning, Harry McCann, who's the founder of KidTech in the Digital Youth Age, Dr. Claire Hayes, consultant, clinical psychologist, lecturer and author of Finding Hope in the Age of Anxiety, Owen O'Dell, associate professor at Trinity College Dublin's Law School and also a member of the Government Data Forum, and News Talk's tech correspondent and presenter of Tech Talk, Jess Kelly, and my thanks to our production team, Stephen Jordan and Aidan McKelvey, with Marianne Kennedy on sound. I'll be back again from 8 o'clock next Sunday morning. But for me, Andrea Gilligan, have a great day.